Welcome to episode 13 of the Teach and Retire Rich podcast, the podcast that covers retirement plan issues facing teachers, professors, nurses, school employees, and those who work in the nonprofit sector. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Hey, Dan. Great. How are you?
Doing well. How was the soccer weekend?
It was a long, grueling soccer weekend, but it was the last weekend of club soccer for my son. He moves on to his first year of high school soccer now. So
that's great. I think we were texting this weekend. I mentioned there's that great episode on The League where the parents are so burnt out by traveling for club soccer that they try to bribe the ref to make their team lose so they don't have to compete in a tournament the next weekend. So,
Well, I can tell you there have been tournaments where we've been rooting for a close game, but a loss.
I think they called it a good loss. We're looking for, I think they said to the ref, we're looking for a good loss.
For a good loss, like a 1-0 on a bad call by the ref, just so we can go home.
That's funny. I can see the kids, you know, at the end of year party seeing video and then wondering, why are their parents high-fiving after the other team scored?
I've never done that. I mean, you've never caught me on video doing that.
At least you don't know that there's video out there.
This is true. This is true.
All right, Scott. Well, we're pretty happy today to be joined by Scott Sensenbrenner. Actually, joined is inaccurate. We had recorded this earlier, and we will play this interview in a moment. Our interview with Scott Sensenbrenner of Fidelity Investments Tax Exempt Group. But before we do that, it is a Sunday late afternoon, and Scott and I are going to each drink a beer. Scott, what do you got?
Well, Dan, in my search for a really good, you know, microbrew, I was at Trader Joe's, and I picked up something that turned out to be Trader Joe's brand. So I don't think this really qualifies as a microbrew, but we're going to go with it anyways. It's called Mission Street Hefeweizen. So at least it's a Hef. I love Hef. I don't know anything about it, except it's Trader Joe's, so maybe it's organic and GMO-free.
Okay, well, let's hope. I have heard Trader Joe's called Trader GMOs, but I'm hoping that's not true.
That's good. Oh, that's funny. Okay. So, about you? What do you got?
I've got a pretty interesting beer here, and I've got a little bit of a story behind it. So I was at a brunch yesterday at my parents, friends of my parents. And just a little side note, I don't go to brunches very often. So, and I've been wanting to work the word brunch into the podcast. So I'm at this brunch, and the hosts are really, really super nice people. And last year, their son and his wife moved to Albuquerque so he could get a doctorate in, I believe, in economics. But his wife, I found out, she has a high-level job for New Belgium. So she is going up to Fort Collins, just north of us here, all the time. And I was asking her how things were at New Belgium, and she told me about this fascinating new beer that they just released within the past week. And I thought she was kidding. It almost sounded like an Onion story. New Belgium has teamed up with Ben and Jerry's to create something called a salted caramel brown ale. And I ran by the local Whole Foods, and I was able to get one. So, Scott, that's what I'm going to drink today.
Wow. Salted caramel brownie.
Brownie brown ale.
Brown ale. That's a mouthful. That sounds it very interesting. It's like a dessert beer.
Absolutely. I agree. And the label's really cool. It kind of looks like a cow with, I don't even know, headphones. It looks like a ski outfit, a scarf. Ski goggles. Yeah, I guess that's what it is. Maybe it's for winter. Anyway, it looks interesting. I'm going to go ahead and pop mine open. Scott, cheers to you.
Cheers to you.
Okay. Wow, that's really good. You need to try this.
I definitely need to try that. Maybe maybe I'll fly out there and we can have some salted caramel brownie brown ale together.
Her name's Megan. We should get Megan on. and talk about New Belgium. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yes, maybe we could do a cross promotion. You know, New Belgium as, you know, trying to get more teachers drinking their beer. I can tell you, please don't take offense to this, teachers, but I've been to some pretty raucous end of the year school parties with teachers, and they kind of know how to drink.
I could see a special edition, I don't know, teacher's pet, something. Maybe we can put that in their ear and see if maybe they would develop that.
That's not a bad idea.
Okay, well, Scott, I'm starting to get worried here. Our little podcast, we're starting to get legit.
Uh-oh.
To a degree. We got somebody from Fidelity Investments on.
Really?
To talk to us. Can you believe this?
I can't believe anybody legit would actually talk to us.
I know. And we also had Mark Luckenbill of Aspire, which is in 3,500 school districts. That was podcast 11. And I think I shared this with you. Vanguard is interested in coming on our little podcast here sometime early next year. So,
wow. Yeah, I wonder if they, after they come on the podcast, if they'd liked us enough, maybe they would get John Bogle on for us.
Oh my gosh. I told you, I've met John Bogle. It was a highlight of my life. I don't know how much I want to get into that. I'll save that. I'll save that for if we get Vanguard, because today is all about Fidelity. This is a company I know that you and I are both fond of. I am an investor in Fidelity products. I have a 457 with them, and my wife, who runs her own business, that's where her retirement plan exclusively is with Fidelity. So I guess what I'll just say is he works in their tax-exempt group, which means, which is, this group is focused on higher ed, healthcare, K-12, faith-based, and research. And he mentions in the interview, this group, you can think of them as those who are helping others. And the technical term is 501c3 organization. So a quick note before we start here, Scott does not drink a beer. Scott Sensini, that is, of Fidelity, is not drinking a beer when he is being interviewed. And we were not drinking a beer when he was being interviewed, which is probably why it sounded really good.
Probably. It'd probably be the first podcast where we didn't slur our speech.
Well, let's go ahead and listen to it and see how it sounded. We welcome Scott Sensini from Fidelity's tax-exempt market business. Scott, how are you?
I'm great. Good to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Let's jump right in. I have a few questions, and then my podcast partner, Scott Downhauer, has a few questions. Scott, describe your role at Fidelity.
Thanks, Dan. I lead our efforts in our tax-exempt market. We work with many not-for-profit organizations and institutions around the country. We provide record-keeping services for those institutions and organizations, and also provide guidance for individuals who are in different stages of their life. Our focus in our tax-exempt market is to help others who are helping others, and that's important for us, and it really is an important mission for us in this group.
And to clarify for our audience, when you say tax-exempt, what would be the market you're talking about?
Good, thank you. It's any 501c3 company in the not-for-profit space. We're primarily focused in the 403b market, with higher education, healthcare, K-12, and public sector. But really, we have clients spanning all areas of not-for-profit, including faith-based research and institutions, and Taft-Hartley on top of the ones I just mentioned.
Okay, terrific. How long have you been at Fidelity, Scott?
Yes, I've been with Fidelity for 15 years, 15 great years.
Oh, that's good to hear. Hey, I've been with Fidelity 10 years as an investor.
Great. Five more to go. Catch up.
So I'm going to ask a question about the K-12 market, and then I'll turn it over to Scott. How would you describe Fidelity's approach to the K-12 market?
That's a good question, Dan. So the K-12 market is an important one for us. We have just about 4,000 client accounts in our K-12 market. I think historically, and as you know, with the K-12 market, the idea of diversification for teachers is to add as many providers as possible. So I think we started off in the K-12 market as wanting to be one of the payroll slots for a school district or for a group of teachers. And I think where that has evolved to, although that's still a primary vehicle for us, especially with many of our investment products, where I think the K-12 market is starting to get to and what we're focused on is more consolidation and aggregation, not only of information but of vendors. And we want to be part of the primary vendor when those consolidations do happen. We're just starting to see that. I think we're on the precipice of that from a K-12 perspective. So our focus in that market is to make sure we're well known throughout the country and on as many plans as possible, but also really take a leadership role as many of these districts are looking to simplify their plan.
Well, Scott and I cheer that. We've been advocating this approach for a long time, and I absolutely agree with your comment that we're at the beginning of this, where we're going to see less vendors but more quality companies like Fidelity jumping in there. So we're very encouraged by this trend. Well, my last question. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Scott. I apologize.
Sorry. Yes, just saying we are encouraged, certainly encouraged as well.
I just think it's so logical. I think with the internet and the more access to information that teachers, school districts, and all of the tax-exempt market have, I think they're going to realize this is the way to go. Less can be more.
Couldn't agree more.
So my last question before I turn it over to Scott Downhower is, what would you tell a teacher listening today who's in a school system that doesn't have Fidelity but wants to add Fidelity?
That's an interesting question, Dan. I would say to that teacher, go to your school district and ask if Fidelity can be made available to you. Adding Fidelity to a school district plan is not a difficult exercise, and we are available in most school districts when asked. The other way to go about this, and I think this has been a common thread for some of your other podcasts, is to really talk to, if they're using an advisor for looking at their portfolio, that teacher, to talk to the advisor about how do I get access to Fidelity funds or the products that are offered by Fidelity. And that advisor can help facilitate that as well with the school district potentially.
Okay, well, thank you for that advice. I'm going to turn it over to Scott Downhower now.
Cool. Hey, Scott. Great having you on. Love the first name. Very nice. So I got a few questions for you. You guys definitely have a big focus in the college, university, the higher education market. And I've noticed over the past probably 10, maybe 15 years that you've gained tremendous amount of market share in that particular category. What's your approach there? What's making you successful?
Thanks, Scott, for the question. And you're right on. We have garnered some real great growth in the higher education marketplace. And I think there's a couple reasons for that. But if we just take a step back from higher education, I think it was very similar to K-12, where the idea of diversification for professors and staff was, let's add as many vendors as possible to the mix and have as many investment solutions and products in an investment lineup for the higher ed plan sponsor as possible. And that really, I think, lends itself to proliferation of choices. So if you're a new professor coming into a university who has all these vendors, you may have 50 different large cap funds to look at or 20 different target date funds, and which one is right? I think too much choice can be paralyzing. And what I think, along with the 403B regulations that came along in 2008 with more needed oversight, what we saw from for many higher education institutions is wanting to simplify and automate their plan. And part of that is to consolidate with either automation services provided by one record keeper and or a platform for investments that's purely open architecture, where there's not an overabundance of proprietary funds or an overabundance of annuity or stable value products that we've seen in the higher education market. And I think part of it was good timing on our part to have a real focus at the right time that changes were happening. The other part, I think the most important thing, is offering flexibility to higher education plan sponsors. Flexibility with their investment offerings, but also flexibility in how they can customize their plan design and approach to making sure their participants, the staff and faculty, are being serviced correctly, in not as a vendor-centric plan, but as a focus on the institution and what their plan is all about.
Interesting. Yeah, if you've listened to some of our podcasts in the past, we've referred to a school district here in California that used to have more than 150 vendors. They've consolidated down to fewer vendors, but there's still 30-plus vendors, and a typical school district in California has 50-plus vendors. And you end up not being able to use economies of scale to get lower pricing, to get better advice. And like you said, they're confusing diversification of vendors with diversification of investment options. So it's interesting that this is taking place more. I definitely see it taking place more in the higher ed market than in the public K-12 market. But perhaps the public K-12 market is just getting started and is going to start getting to play catch up here.
I think that's true, Scott. And we just went through a process for us. One of our initial largest K-12 plans, a school district here out east, just consolidated to actually one vendor, that being Fidelity. And they had multiple vendors in proliferation, and they took the path of wanting to look more like a 401k plan. And more importantly, their fiduciary oversight and the oversight of their plan, they wanted to be in control. And full control, not only evaluating and monitoring their investment lineup, but making sure that if they have things that they want to do from a plan design and administration perspective, that it can happen with and work with one firm and one vendor versus having to do that across 10 or 15 or, as you say, even 30 or 100 plus. It is a much more efficient experience for any school district or higher education, university, or college to be working with less vendors in a more automated, efficient way.
Yeah, and speaking of that win, that's actually one of the things that caught our attention and made us want to interview you guys. That win, as well as a win here in California with a large higher education institution, in both instances, they went from somewhere around five vendors and consolidated down to just a single vendor, with Fidelity winning those mandates. And these were two pretty high-profile cases, and you guys won them both. I wonder, what is it that's different about Fidelity? What do you attribute your success in winning these mandates to?
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Scott. And I was intimately involved in both of them, so brings back some good recent memories, I think. And I would say that a couple of things on the point of why we were successful there is, first and foremost, as if you're looking to be a lead or exclusive record keeper of the plan, you have to prove that you are able to do the blocking and tackling for large, complex organizations very well. And what I mean by that is you have to have flawless record keeping. Your operational capability has to meet the needs of the plan design of the institution or district, and you have to be flexible with coming up with creative solutions as these organizations evolve and change. For both of those cases, there were certain things that each institution wanted to accomplish in adjusting their plan, and it required adjustments on our side in our record keeping system to be flexible there. Not every vendor can do that. So number one is you have to make sure you are world class and sound on your record keeping and operational capabilities. Number two, and maybe more important because it directly impacts the employees and the faculty and the staff, is you have to show that you're able to generate and provide interactions and guidance to participants that will get them best ready for retirement. And retirement outcomes is I think a commonly used term across the industry, but providing the right guidance and the right tools in an easy-to-use fashion so a participant in any stage of their life can take their next best step to eventually live comfortably in retirement. And how you do that across vastly different populations, and the unique way you do that with different groups and constituents, you have to prove in this case why your organization is best suited to do that. And that's the second thing I think that we were able to prove to these organizations, that we were the best fit to do that.
That's interesting, Scott. With the, correct me if I'm wrong here, but typically, at least with K-12 and higher education, there's kind of historically been this very, I'll use the term advisor-centric model, although I think using the term advisor is probably not the best term. It's been more salesperson focused. So there's always been an insurance agent involved. It's always been kind of more one-on-one than 401k type plans have been. And when I think of Fidelity, I don't necessarily think of a large boots on the ground type strategy where there's, you know, lots of Fidelity advisors on campus, so to speak. But it does seem like today's plans, they do want some personal advice and some one-on-ones as well. How did Fidelity bridge that gap between maybe their traditional 401k model and this kind of old style 403b model?
Sure. Thanks, Scott, for the question. I think it's a really good one in that how does, in a market that has been dominated by face-to-face on-site and potentially more of an insurance-based model, how do we adjust to that? And I think the best way I would say that is we take what we call an omni-channel or multi-channel approach to working with a client, whether that's in higher education or K-12. And what I mean by omni or multi-channel is that not all individuals need to have a face-to-face meeting to get the right level of guidance in person at their campus or at their location. That's a part of it. And by the way, we have over 300 individuals across the country who do that on campus. So that's a piece of what we do, and it's an important piece, but it's not the only piece. Many people like to have phone conversations with the same type of individual to get that guidance, and you want to make sure that that approach is consistent, whether in face-to-face or in person. The other thing is, especially the newer employees and the millennials, although they do want to have interactions face-to-face, their first interaction is typically wanting to be online, whether that's their smart device, mobile, or via their computer, and you have to have the technology and the tools across all those forums to be able to speak to those individuals in the way that they want. And so the last thing I'll mention to it is Fidelity also has 180 investor centers, what we call our investor centers, across the country. These are brick-and-mortar locations. And in both cases that you mentioned, in the East Coast and in California, we have local presence, although not on the campus or at the institution or in the school district itself, but in the neighboring towns and cities, where that any individual can walk into one of our branches, one of our investor centers, to have a conversation. So you take all of that combined, which we call our omni or multi-channel approach, and we like to think that approach to the market, to helping guide individuals, can be more effective than just having boots on the ground on campus or at the school district.
That's great. I want to take a step back to the two recent wins that you guys had. I'm sure you've had lots more wins than just those two, but these two stuck out to us because of the fact they were very similar. They both had existing vendors, multi-vendor process. They had quite a few vendors, and then several years ago they consolidated down to about five, and then they consolidated again down to about one. One of the issues in 403B that really concerns most plans and plan sponsors is the fact that if they consolidate down to a single vendor, they haven't really eliminated all of the work with the prior vendors. Those prior vendors are actually still part of the plan. And I think most school districts don't realize this, but the ones who are consolidating do. And so how do you handle having to, you know, take over this plan, be the single vendor, but also having to do compliance work and still work with some of the old assets that are technically still part of the plan?
Yes. Another good question, Scott. And what's so interesting about 403B Marketplace is when you consolidate to a single vendor, it's really a misnomer. What we mean by single vendor or exclusive vendor is only one firm is accepting contributions. In the case of the two you mentioned, that's Fidelity. So all future contributions are coming to the new lineup that the plan sponsor and their advisor has chosen. But all of those legacy assets, or many of those legacy assets, because of the historical nature in 403B of what we call individual contracts, or the relationship being with the insurance company and the participant, contractually, where the money can only move if the participant actually decides to move it. The plan sponsor can't move that money, which is very different than the 401k market. So you still have these, what we call these legacy relationships. And there's two things to talk about there, Scott. One is we certainly have and need to have compliance services on the back end for distribution. So people can still take loans out, and hardships, and we have to make sure that the plan sponsor, from a fiduciary perspective, is viewing all of that activity in aggregation. So there is the compliance services that Fidelity helps provide to help monitor these other legacy assets. So that's one piece of it. But I think the more important piece, the second piece, is related to how we interact with participants. And when a plan sponsor decides to go to an exclusive vendor relationship, what they're saying is, I've created a new investment lineup, and I want all of our participants to make sure they're aware of this lineup. And it's part of Fidelity's job to encourage participants to talk to us about the new investment lineup and what options that they have. So we come at it in more of an agnostic way, where we're saying you can certainly stay in the investments that you currently have, and especially some of the fixed options that are providing a guaranteed rate of return. However, there also are other options that are available to you that your employer is monitoring for you, and there's a way to go about getting into those investments and taking some of your legacy assets or all and moving them into the more modern lineup that has been signed off on by your employer. So those conversations with participants happen every day, and it's in good cooperation and partnership with our clients who have chosen to do that, and that's the way that money starts to transfer from those legacy options over to the new investment lineup that the plan sponsor has chosen.
You mentioned fixed accounts, and I think that's a good segue to my last question. Then I'll hand it back to Dan. Traditionally, the 403B market, whether you're looking at K-12 or higher education, but really in K-12, it's been dominated by fixed annuities. And teachers tend to have a lower, I guess, a risk tolerance. It's a little bit lower. At least that tends to be the idea out there. But I think part of the main reason that there's so many fixed annuities in K-12, 403B, and used to be in higher ed is because That's what agents get paid to sell. And I'm not going to ask you to comment on that, but since there is a significant amount of assets in fixed accounts, and teachers tend to like these fixed accounts, how does Fidelity approach this stable value type option within their 403B structure?
Sure. I think, Scott and Dan, it's very important that, and I think one of the, I often get asked, what are some of the benefits of a 403B market versus a 401k market? And I think one of those is the more the mindset of retirement income in K through 12 and higher ed and the other areas of the 403B market. And that has been helped by offerings that provide a stable return, or I think what's more commonly known as annuities in a fixed or variable format. And so there's absolutely a place for those in, I think, all markets, but certainly in the 403B market, especially for those who might want to secure some of their income or retirement. And so our approach to it is a little bit different than the others, especially some insurance companies, who offer only their proprietary annuity offerings, which is we tend to provide an open suite of annuity or fixed stable return offerings on our platform. So we partner with many of the companies that you know well who are very good at providing stable return, stable value, fixed and variable annuities, and we provide those on our platform. So we're more of the open architecture approach to those fixed accounts. And I will tell you that there is a strong place for annuities in a retirement plan. We just want to make sure that there's options available there and that there's flexibility as to which ones an employer can choose. And also, I think we want to make sure that the transparency of annuity products continues to get more strong in the marketplace. And I think there's still a little bit of room to grow in that area.
Really good information. Before we close, Scott, is there anything else you would like to share about Fidelity?
I'll just say, thanks, Dan. I would just say that we are proud to serve the not-for-profit market. It's a very big growth market for us. It's why 30 years ago we decided to make a dedicated unit for just this marketplace. And we're proud to service the folks who work in the not-for-profit market. I think we're going to see some really exciting things to come in the 403B space, especially related to efficiencies at the plan sponsor level, but also a real focus on making retirement and making accumulating for retirement and distributing those accumulations easier to understand for participants and a more seamless process. And I really look forward to what the next 10 years has to bring here in the 403B market.
Well, we're really happy to have your company a part of the market. We think you are really driving change. And I know I speak for my partner, Scott, here. We were thrilled to have you on today. Thank you so much, Scott. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Scott. Really glad being on and would love to join again sometime.
Okay, sounds good. Take care, Scott.
Bye-bye.
All right, Scott, what are your thoughts?
Well, Dan, that was a good interview, if I, you know, do say so myself. But actually, there was a few things that struck that kind of stuck to me. The first one was, one of the quotes was, the idea of a diversification equals as many vendors as possible. And I thought that was kind of funny because that really is kind of the mentality. And it's in a mentality that's really pushed by the 403B industry and really the agent industry because they profit from it. And it's extremely flawed thinking because having 100 vendors doesn't actually create diversification. You only need one vendor, and then within that vendor to have the correct mutual funds and investment options to create diversification. So it's very flawed, although it is endemic in the way people think. Also, too much choice can be paralyzing, was one of the comments, and that's right out of Behavioral Finance 101. I think it would be really interesting for us to do a podcast on behavioral finance, but there's been a lot of research into having too much choice. People just do nothing. And, you know, we're talking about school districts that still have 30, 40, 50 vendors, and within those vendors, two or three investment options or product options. So we're talking still hundreds of products. Nobody, not even an advisor, can evaluate that many products. And that is leading a lot of people to just do nothing. And that's a problem. Fiduciary oversight, I think, can make another great podcast. What's the requirement here? Is there a fiduciary duty in K-12 403B? This is a very controversial issue. And then finally, this face-to-face, this idea that, you know, people need to have face-to-face contact with an advisor to get things done. I think it's important, and I like the way that he talked about different, you know, having different things for different people, you know, millennials having, you know, the mobile devices, although I still think some millennials want to meet face-to-face. Everybody's different. And so it really, it gets to this agents versus advisors model, or really even this model where you have a single vendor and someone who is employed by that vendor, such as Fidelity, who provides kind of some face-to-face stuff. And what is that face-to-face stuff going to be? Is it advice? Is it advice just on the 403B? Is it advice? Is it financial planning advice? There's a lot there. So those are the things that stuck out to me. What about you?
Well, right off the bat, the first thing that stuck out to me is that we did sound a lot smarter because we weren't drinking, but we're drinking now. So maybe it's the beer I'm drinking right now at this moment that's telling me that we sounded smarter 2 weeks ago when we did that interview.
That's right. Is it cause and effect, or is the effect because of the cause?
I think you nailed it. I think Scott Senseney of Fidelity is just a very bright guy, and it's clear they have a strong understanding of this market, and you can see why they're successful. They've been aggressive. They're leveraging technology. They have these different channels to create sort of a relationship with their clientele. And I should say, in interest of full disclosure, Fidelity is an advertiser on 403B Wise. But I will also say, as I said in the past, that we only accept advertising from companies that we think offer really good value. But I was pretty impressed with what he had to say. And it's very clear that they are gaining market share and they are very successful in this marketplace.
Yeah, I'd also point out there that Fidelity didn't ask to come on this podcast, and it was not part of their advertising agreement to be on this podcast. We seeked them out independently, and they agreed to do it. And in fact, it was kind of funny. I'm not even sure Scott knew that they had advertised on
it. That's true, right?
At first, so. Well, what do you think about this whole idea of face-to-face? What's your thoughts there?
Well, clearly it's very expensive to put people in every school district in the country. And that's the model the insurance industries use. And that's why their products are 3, 4, 5, 6 times as expensive. Frankly, I think you're always going to have a group of people that want to talk to someone face to face. And he mentioned they have 180 investor centers. And sure, that doesn't saturate the country, but I don't know how many airports we have around the country. I know we have 50 states, so does every state have really one or two big airports? So maybe 180 is the right number. I'm sure they've done demographic studies and have located those in population centers. They have one here in Albuquerque, and I've used it. I'm certainly not a millennial, as I turned 50 last May, but I'm very comfortable interacting over the phone or online, which is what I do because I am a Fidelity customer. I have a 457 with them. And then my wife, who is a web designer and runs her own business, she has her retirement plan with Fidelity. So we've had a lot of interaction with them and we're comfortable with it, but we may be outliers because we know something about this stuff. I just don't think you can have really low costs and have an advisor everywhere all the time. I just don't think that's realistic.
Well, I think the key really is getting down to one vendor. If you've got, or just very few. If you've got the situation that we have in most places right now, which is 5, 10, up to 30 or 40, you do not, vendors, you do not get economies of scale, meaning you don't have one company that has enough assets that they can distribute the cost of an advisor across those assets. You know, to give you an example, if you've got a plan that has $1 billion in assets concentrated in one vendor, that vendor is going to be able to send out into that school district, that employer, the employer's population, probably, I'd say, anywhere from 6 to 10, maybe 12 advisors, depending on the area, because costs vary. In LA, those advisors are going to cost you a lot more than they're going to be, say, in Omaha. The problem is that there are very few economies of scale. The more economies of scale you can get, the more people you can hire and distribute those costs across those economies of scale. And so you can still have relatively low-cost options and some face-to-face interaction. The question then becomes, what does that interaction look like? Is it just that 403B and 457 plan? Or is it a little more expansive? I think the more you expand what it is that advisor's doing, it gets a little more complicated. And so maybe you have face-to-face with some plan representative, and then for more in-depth financial planning, you hire someone like, say, from the Garrett Planning Network.
Oh, I think you are so right. This idea that we have now, multi-vendor environment, I think it prevents... prevents the creation of a education environment. Instead, you have a sales environment. You have 5 to 20 representatives of different companies fighting for market share. If you do what Fidelity's doing, and we mentioned it, they have won a very high-profile RFP for a K-12 school district on the East Coast that we both know very well, and I think we'll probably do something on it individually down the road. But they went from 9 vendors to 1. Fidelity won that RFP. So now there's no need to do sales. They've got the business. Now they can do education. And for them, it's probably very cost effective to have specific representatives just for that K-12 school district. And again, I don't know the details of the plan yet, but I think you are right on the money talking about this, these advantages of one vendor. And of course, the caveat is you do it right. You don't pick one bad vendor, because then that's probably worse than a lot of the current situations.
Absolutely. And Dan, you and I have experienced providing education in different environments. We have, we've been paid speakers across the country in different places. And inevitably, in places where it's multiple vendor, it is so much more difficult. When you have a single vendor and you really, what you're doing is you're taking the focus away from the, it's ironic. When you have a single vendor, you actually take the focus away from that vendor. And it's more focused on education, as opposed to when you have this multiple vendor environment, the focus has to really be on, okay, how do you choose the right vendor? And then how do you move to choosing the right investment options with that vendor? It gets so much more complicated. When you keep things simple, it makes it better for everybody.
Yeah, and the irony is it actually kind of hurts our business. One of the things that I've done, and you've helped me with this, Scott, is we've created information websites for different entities that explains how retirement plans work for school districts in multi-vendor environments. Because these entities have come to us and said, look, we feel like our people are being sold products and they don't have the education. So we've created almost a version of 403BYs for them. So the idea being the teachers, school employees can come to this website we've created. We call it the Your Plan Information Portal. And I guess that is a little bit of a plug, Scott, but it is the emphasis on education. So we create this education environment and then people can then go to the vendors and know what questions to ask. And if more of these places go to single vendor, which again, we're going to advocate for because that's the best system. So it is kind of funny. It actually hurts us. And as you mentioned, we've spoken to lots of school districts in school groups around the country. It's probably one of our favorite things to do. We have a lot of fun interacting with people. So again, if you ever want any more information on that, you can interview, you can email me at dan@403bwise.com. Scott, that sounded like an ad, didn't it?
Yeah, it kind of did. But you know, it's you're absolutely right. The funniest thing is we actively advocate to put ourselves out of business. How are we going to stay? How are we going to be able to put clothes on our kids' back, man? I mean, geez. But I think if you – somebody once said, and I'm going to totally screw this up. I'm like Tim the Tool Man Taylor. But if you do the right thing, the money will follow.
Yeah.
And I think that's apt. You know, if the portals go away, we'll find something else to take that place. But it really is – it's what's right for the teachers. When you do what's right for the teachers, you know, good things are going to come from it.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think Steve Jobs talked about that. If you don't cannibalize yourself, somebody else will. In many ways, I would say I look at the iPhone, the big iPhone, in a way that kind of is cannibalizing the iPad, although it's pretty clear they're trying to do more with the iPad, but we're starting to get into the tech topic here. So Scott, any kind of sort of last thoughts on fidelity? Any kind of thoughts, ideas?
Well, you know, we try not to be too much of a fanboys here on the podcast.
Unless it's Elizabeth Warren.
Unless it's Elizabeth Warren or, you know, Cheryl Garrett or Vanguard or Jack Vogel, things like that. But, you know, there are very few good companies in this space. And when I say very few, I mean less than you can count on one hand. And I have to give it to Fidelity. They are one of those providers that would... I'd count on that one hand of mine. So, I mean, even people who have four fingers have probably one too many in terms of how many good vendors there are in this market for 403B. So I have to hand it to them. I'm really impressed and very happy to see that they're investing in this market and doing it in a wise manner. Because I see a lot of entities get into this market and they'll throw a lot of money at it, but just in very stupid ways. Mm-hmm. So I'm impressed to see that how they're approaching the market, and it's clearly working for them.
Yeah, I agree, and I hope hopefully other representatives from companies in that list of five or so listen to this and want to come on to our podcast, and they want to be aggressive as well in this marketplace because it ultimately helps the people we're trying to help, the participant.
You bet. Yeah, I hope so as well.
Well, Scott, any last words here before we close out?
I'm a man of few words today. The beer is working through, so no, I'm good. What about you?
No, and I'm sure you spent the whole weekend cheering for your kids, and that can be mentally exhausting as well. All the logistics of getting the soccer games and making sure the kids are all ready and all that kind of stuff. So completely understand. I'm sure you're ready to enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I just thought of something. So I just got done drinking a New Belgium beer that they teamed up with Ben & Jerry's. Do you think Ben & Jerry's is going to now offer a beer or a beer-flavored ice cream?
Ooh, that's a good question. I wonder if that would taste any good.
It sounds like something I might have...
What the hell are they going to sell it in?
Exactly. I feel like it's something I experienced in my college days, and I have a feeling it was not very, very tasty.
Probably not.
All right, Scott, let's close out. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, man. Always good talking to you.
You do the same. Thanks, Dan.
See ya.